And now, our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents North America's Forgotten Past by W. Michael Gear and Kathleen O'Neill Gear. Narrated by Lynette Savard, with performances by Joseph Thornhill, Karen Novak, Lily Beacon, Thomas Keegan, Kimberly Gilbert, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Barbara Pinellini, Christopher Sheeran, Yasmin Toison, Terrence Aselford, Joe Brack, Christopher Graybill, Elizabeth Jernigan, Sherry Simpson, Richard Rowan, Faith Potts, Britton Herring, Ted Stoddard, James Konacek, Colleen Delaney, Ken Jackson, and Drew Kopus. Book 1, People of the Wolf, Part 1.
The pickup bucked and heaved as it bounced over the scraggy greasewood. Red dust whirled and puffed under the knobby all-terrain tires. The four-wheel drive clawed its way up an eroded terrace, lining out to lurch and sway over blue-green sagebrush as it headed for the yellow equipment parked below the bluff on the other side of the flat. The driver braked to a stop amidst the sweet smell of crushed sage and the bitter tint of alkali dust. Two cats, a backhoe, and a pipeline trenching machine, along with a handful of pickups, waited. The driver stiffened his back and stretched after the long drive. Heads appeared from the pipeline trench, yellow hard hats bright against the wind-road dirt. A foreman pulled himself up out of the trench.
You're here. About time, Dr. Cogs. You damned archaeologists are costing me money. We gotta get this pipe laid by the 10th of December, and this delay's soaking up tens of thousands of dollars of the company's money a day.
Yeah, well, let's see what we got here. Old floodplain terrace like this, you won't find much. Besides, from the geomorphology, this terrace must be about 15,000 years old. That's the end of the Pleistocene. What you cut is probably intrusive. Some homesteader buried out here. Who knows?
Cogs reached in the truck, bending around the gear shift levers to pull out an old military ammo box and a scarred briefcase. Together, the two men threaded their way through the gnarled sagebrush to the trench to stare down at an area where the backhoe had peeled back the overburden. A one-man sifting screen stood propped over a conical pile of dirt. A young, sunburned woman looked up.
Dr. Cogs?
Hi, Ann. What'd you find?
Cogs jumped down into the trench. The young woman looked smugly at the catskinners and construction workers as she indicated a black plastic sheet over the square carved out of the backhoe trench.
Just a solitary burial, Dr. Cogs. I was monitoring the trench through here, thought this would be pretty dull. Then, the trencher clipped an arm. saw the distal portion of the radius and ulna in the back dirt. That's when I shut them down.
The foreman frowned and crossed his arms, his face stiff. Cogs shrugged at him and glanced at Anne.
Mm-hmm. Intrusive?
No way. She was here and got covered. There's sorted gravels in the same strata she's in. If I was guessing, I'd say she drowned and got left behind in the flood.
On a Pleistocene terrace?
That's right. Take a look.
Cogs, with Anne's help, lifted the protecting black plastic from the excavation. He paused, taking in the skeleton. From the pelvic bones, he could tell it had been a woman. One arm had flopped out in death. The severed bone glared garishly yellow-white where the trencher bucket had taken it off. He bent down over the skull.
Old. Only a couple of teeth in her head. And they're incisors. Can hardly see a suture in her skull except for the squamosals. I'd say someone in her late 60s at least. Probably older. Look at the arthritis in her spine. Must have hurt like crazy.
From his ammo box, he pulled a trowel and tested the gravel-laden silts the burial lay in. He chewed his lip and nodded.
All right, I agree. Caught in a flood? Sure, why not? Explains the preservation.
We don't find many Paleo-Indian burials.
None from formations this old. I wonder...
I didn't want to take it down any further, considering the age of the deposit. I thought... What's that?
Cogs cleared an area next to the rib cage and peeled back hard silt, using the tip of the trowel to expose something red-orange.
You get any artifacts out of this?
One piece of weathered shell. Looked like it might have been clam. Can't say if it was associated.
Anne bent closer as Cogs reached for a paintbrush and whisked the loose dirt away, exposing a long, blood-red jasper projectile point.
Jesus! Look at that!
The foreman and his crew jammed in to see.
What is it?
Clovis! A genuine Clovis burial!
Trowling on her own, she uncovered yet another point.
Beautiful workmanship! Look at this one! Red banded yellow chert! Exquisite!
That's a hallmark of Clovis. Incredible stonework.
That's the most beautiful point I've ever seen.
And an old woman carried them? Says something about the social structure. She must have been a leader of some kind. Of course, after the Oregon points.
Hey, we gotta get this pipeline in! What's a Clovis?
The first Americans. Oldest culture in North America. Nobody's ever found a burial like this before.
You're costing me 10 grand a day for a damned old pile of bones? By God, I'm writing my congressman about this one. What the hell?
Cogs gave the man a disgusted look as Anne just shook her head.
You're gonna get your pipeline in.
We are.
The foreman pushed his hat back on his head.
We'll do some testing. Put in some excavation squares to see if anything else is buried. But I don't think there's more here than just this one. You can see the evidence of the flooding in the pit walls. Look at her right foot. See how the bone's all spurred? She broke her ankle once, years before she died. Must have hurt like hell to walk on that. It had never been set.
Yeah, pretty nasty. How long for you to do that damn testing?
A couple of days.
I wonder who she was.
Fire crackled in Heron's sheltered crevice, sparks whirling upward. Overhead, a matte black of soot had grown velvet, thick, softening the gritty surface of the rock. Along the lower walls, willow and thick dry grass broke the chill seeping from the floor. A double hanging of smoke-darkened caribou hide kept Wind Woman's arctic blasts from penetrating the cracks in the rock. In a ring around the edges, bleached skulls from Grandfather White Bear, Caribou, Wolf, and White Fox, eye sockets empty, stared at the flickering light. The clean, white bone displayed odd, colorful designs, symbols of shaman power. As the woman leaned tiredly forward, long tangles of thick black hair tumbled across her face, reflecting a bluish sheen in the fire's glow. Tenderly, she patted the decaying granite below her feet. In niches and crannies, Fetishes lay bundled in drab browns of willow bark, aged and tinged with smoke from sacred fires.
I'm still here, waiting. You didn't think I'd gone, did you?
When no answer came, Heron settled back against the cold stone wall. Staring into the red, shifting eye of the fire, she raised her hands, tracing ancient symbols of spirit power in the air before her.
Help me see, help me see, help me see.
She plucked a handful of dried willow bark and dipped it in a skin water bag hung from a tripod to her right. Shaking the bark, she threw it onto the flames. Warm, wet smoke billowed upward to the draft hole high above as Heron tried to send her vision out beyond the orange-tinged walls.
There. I have heard you calling. I will find you.
Huddling over the flames, she closed her eyes, the traces of her legendary beauty barely obscured by time's hand. Through her straight nose, she inhaled the steam, allowing peace and tranquility to flow through her like morning mist in the valleys. The pungent odor of willow smoke filled her senses. For 4 days, she had fasted, singing, bathing in the warm waters that bubbled up from the earth, steaming in the frigid air beyond the shelter. But in the haze of smoky steam, still no vision appeared.
Well, this isn't working. I'd better try something else.
She hesitated, frightened, feeling the call. She looked at the foxhide bundle.
Yes. I fear your power. Power is knowing and death.
The silent call came again, urgent, tugging her soul. Heron made her decision. With trembling fingers, she lifted a second bundle from beside her and undid the layers of tanned foxhide, displaying 4 thin sections of precious mushroom. Each of these she passed 4 times through the warm willow smoke, once for each of the directions of the world, east for the coming of the long dark, north for the depth of the long dark, west for the rebirth of the world, and finally, south, for the long light and the life it brought.
Open my vision. Show me the way. Open my vision. Show me what I seek. Open my vision.
She forced her soul into the one, careful to keep from the nothingness that lay on the other side, beckoning, terrifying. One by one, she purified the mushrooms and lifted them to her lips, slowly chewing. Bitterness stung her tongue. She swallowed and leaned back, palms propped on knees. Before her, the smoke swirled like fog rolling in from the big salt water. Ghostly images twisted and turned, shimmering in a whirling dance. Heron squinted her ancient brown eyes to focus in the haze. Minutes passed as she peered, forehead furrowed with the effort.
Who?
An image grew in the mist. Breakers smashing furiously against craggy black rocks. There, along the ebb and flow of the shore, a woman hunched, heedless of the power of the waves. With a stick, she pried mussels from the rock, dropping them into a hide sack. Behind a towering bastion of black rock, a man crouched, watching. When the woman scurried along the retreating tide, filling her bag with the bounty of the sea, he followed. A thick mammoth hide belt bound his waist. From either side of a thin eagle's beak of a nose, gleaming black eyes stared. A cloak of white fox hide hung over his shoulders. Through the vision, Heron sensed the strength of his soul, throbbing, intense. A man of power, of visions.
He dreams, even now.
The scene shimmered, emotions billowing through the images. Pain, loss of love, a longing from the very depths of his soul tangled about her. Heron reached for him, a cord from her own sorrow touched by his anguish. As she projected, something snapped, crackling along the edges of the vision like dry leaves. A feeling of parting trembled in the mists. Awed at what she'd done, Heron pulled back. The woman on the beach stopped, head tilted, black hair blowing in the sea breeze. As a hare drawn to the gaze of a fox, she jerked around, eyes widening as the man approached, face anxious, arms spread as if to embrace her. Fear contorted the woman's features. Desperately, she ran, seeking to dart past him, feet leaving white pox in coarse gray sand. He fainted and grabbed her. The terrified woman beat at him with futile fists, but with the hardened thews of the hunter, he threw her down, pinning her hands.
Fight, girl! Fight him!
Lost in his dream, the man avoided his captive's thrashing legs, overpowering her until she lay under him, shivering with fear. He worked her parka up and over her long boots while she tried to twist away. The struggle was brief, the woman no match for the hunter's strength. He unfastened his front bindings and fell on her. Heron shook her head as he took the woman on the sand, power spinning out of balance in the vision. Spent, the man stood, an absent look on his face. His fingers shook as he refastened the bindings of his long boots. Almost by chance, his eyes met Heron's as she peered through the mist. He stiffened in surprise. He looked back at the woman on the sand, horror suddenly filling his eyes. Dazed, he shook his head, backing away. As suddenly, he turned, staring into Heron's eyes with hot anger. A clenched fist raised. His handsome face twisted. Tears streaked his cheeks. Then he turned, running away, leaping rocks in his flight. Mist swirled as the vision faded into dusky obscurity. The call came again, loud now, insistent. Heron rubbed a calloused hand over her face.
It wasn't him I need to find. No. No, not him at all. Who then? Who?
Reaching for willow bark, she threw a handful on the glowing coals, following the path of the call through the one. Another vision grew in the billowing steam. The woman from the beach lay naked, her stomach child swollen, navel protruding. Around her, other women watched, eyes gleaming in the light of a birch and willow fire. Sweat dampened the woman's brow and trickled down from between her breasts to stain the hide she rested on. She contorted, legs wide, as the other women leaned close, peering intently. The woman's breasts heaved as her water broke and pooled dark on the umber hides. One of the old ones nodded. The birth came with difficulty. The fetus emerged, red, blue, and streaked with the fluids of the womb. An extremely lovely woman bent down and bit the umbilical in two, while others took the child, rubbing it dry with grasses. Heron's heart tightened with hurt as she recognized the beauty.
Broken branch, you bitch. Your father's son let you be buried to death, your soul locked in the earth forever.
Heron focused on the baby again. A shaft of sunlight filtering through a rent in the roof above danced on the child. The new mother, stomach still distended, writhed again, pushing, legs twisting, while two of the others held her ankles. A second child emerged, feet protruding. A crone moved to crouch over the mother, head cocked as she watched. Gnarled hands reached, parting the tissues, and worked the child. The old one shook her head. Wincing, she pulled, turning the baby. The woman tensed as the child came, gouts of blood following in a flood. Heron shook her head, knowing the signs. Something had torn inside. Bright blood welled over the infant as its head cleared the pelvis. Such a big child, heedless of his mother's lifeblood, where it trickered into his toothless mouth.
Bad blood. Bad.
Heron trembled, fear for the woman building in her breast. A slack look replaced the fevered glow in her eyes. Her legs kicked limply and stopped, as her color drained with the endless crimson rush. Boys, both of them. Hunters for the people. Careful hands stroked the second child, seeking unsuccessfully to wipe away the clinging gore as the umbilical was bitten in two and the child placed by the first. From somewhere above, a black feather wafted down, settling beside the infant. As he squalled, his tiny fist grabbed it, twisting it in rage. Heron studied them where they lay, side by side. One bawled angrily, blood-streaked, a raven feather in its tiny fist. The other wiggled and kicked in the shaft of sunlight, eyes unfocused as if lost in a dream. He blinked, wailing softly, and for a brief second his eyes seemed to sharpen, seeking her beyond the mists of the vision.
You. It was you who called.
Heron nodded, leaning back.
Yes. You dream, child. I see power in your eyes. And now that I know you, I'll be waiting.
The vision broke, wisps of smoke carrying it up through the rock to the chill night beyond. Heron clenched her hands into fists, reeling from the effects of the mushroom. She staggered to her feet and wobbled past the caribou hide hangings. Frigid night air gripped her, causing her to sink to her knees. The thick sulfur odor of the hot springs clogged her nose. She bent over, her stomach churning. The voices of the mushrooms whispered in her blood, death hanging in their sultry tones as she struggled to keep the one, to allow the mushroom to fade in her veins. As she blinked and rubbed her mouth, she suddenly felt the presence of Wolf tying itself to the vision. The long dark continued, unending, eating their souls. Wind Woman whipped across the frozen drifts, whirling wreaths of snow into the Arctic night. In her fury, she blasted the mammoth hide shelters of the people with a gust that battered the frozen skins over the head of the one called Runs in Light. Blinking awake, he listened to the howling gale. Around him, the others of the people huddled in their thick robes, deep asleep. Cold, so cold. An uncontrollable shiver made him wish they had more fat to burn in the fire hole, but it was gone. 17 long darks hadn't put much muscle on his skinny bones to start with, and famine had wasted the rest. Even old Broken Branch muttered that she'd never seen a winter like this. Runs in Light cast his mind back to the dark words of Crow Caller.
Sunfather's losing his strength. Cloud Mother wraps herself around Blue Sky Man and sucks up his warmth. This year, Mammoth will die. Musk Ox will die. Caribou will stay far south with Buffalo. The people will wither.
And it was so. The melting time during the long light had barely lasted through one turning of Moon Woman's face. Then Cloud Mother had covered the skies. Constant rain and snow raged out of the north to kill the long light. Cold lay heavy on the land, when the grasses, willows, and tundra plants should have grown tall to feed Mammoth. Crow Caller spent his time praying for a dream. The old shaman trapped Seagull once and twisted his neck four turns. The limp bird in his calloused brown hands, he'd sliced through the down feathers with an obsidian blade to expose the guts. He'd peered, his one good eye gleaming, to see what news Seagull brought from so far out among the floating ice mountains on the great salt water to the north.
Back. We must go north. Back the way we came.
The people had looked at each other anxiously, remembering the ones who pursued them, the ones they called the Others. Mammoth hunters like themselves. But men who murdered and chased the people from the fertile hunting grounds to the north. Could the people go back? Could they face those fierce warriors? Once, so the elders told, The people had lived on the other side of the huge mountains to the west. There, Father's son had given them a wondrous land of rivers abounding in grassy plains rich in game. Then the others had come, driving them from the land, pushing them north and east against the salt water. Father's son, in his wisdom, had given them a new land at the mouth of the big river, where they could see the big ice extending out into the salt water. The others had followed, pushing the people away from the lush hunting grounds at the mouth of the big river, pushing them down this last long valley, ever to the south. Now the ground rose, the mountains hemming them from the west, the big ice encroaching from the east. What was left? And behind, the others continued to push, forcing the people ever higher into the rocky hills devoid of game. So the elders debated while the people worried. Was there enough game in this high rocky country, where little grasses grew for mammoth and caribou? What would the people do? And then the young hunter called One Who Cries had run into camp, calling to all that he'd found three dead mammoths. So they'd talked. Against Crow Caller's judgment, the people had gone farther south to butcher the giant beasts, eating their way into the carcasses while the long dark grew longer over their heads, chasing Father Son to his southern home. Crow Caller had raged that the hunger would be their punishment for disobeying Seagull's oracle. The people had stayed, splitting even Mammoth's small bones for what marrow remained. But Mammoth no longer came to Crow Caller's chanted prayers. Muskox and caribou stayed far to the north, near the Great Salt Water. Despite the protests of Old Broken Branch, the people had eaten the dogs. First, the pack dogs were turned into stew. Finally, in desperation, the bear dogs were dispatched and dropped into boiling bags, a sure sign the people were near catastrophe. Men and women hunted, finding nothing but darkness and ice. Grandfather White Bear killed Throw's bones and dragged him away into the darkness to eat. And the people starved. Runzin Light sat up at the sound. Some animal scratched for food scraps the people had long since chipped from the ice. Heart pounding with hope, Runzin Light traced chill-stiff fingers over his atlatl, the ornately carved throwing stick used by the people to catapult stone-tipped darts. He squirmed out from under frosty hides. Creeping tendrils of cold stroked the last warm places on his body. As, bent low, he stepped silently over fur-wrapped sleepers. Even in the icy air, the stink of the shelter, occupied for months, came to his nose. Buried under the hides, Laughing Sunshine's baby moved weakly, the tiny sign of life tugging at Runzin Light's heart.
Where are you, Father Son?
He tightened his grip on the atlatl until his fingers ached. Then, like a seal through an ice hole, he wiggled under the crawl flap. Wind Woman rushed down from the black northwest, shoving him backward. He steadied himself against the shelter, squinting into the lighter darkness beyond. Runzin Light circled, following the lee of a drift, hoping Wind Woman would keep his scent from whatever was out there. On hands and knees, he crawled to the top of the drift and slithered over the crest on his belly. Dark against the stained snow, a wolf struggled to dig flies like a seagull's body from the clinging ice. Runzin Light bowed his head in sorrow. He'd found his mother frozen in her robes a week before. He smiled wistfully, remembering the light in her eyes as she chanted of the great dreamers, of Heron and Sunwalker, and other legendary heroes of the people. How soft and caring her hand had been as it resettled the furs around a younger and happier Runzin Light's cold face. A bitter chill touched his soul as he saw a more recent visage of her toothless death rictus, her frost-grayed eyes. So many had starved. Too weak to do more than stumble out of the shelters, the people had carried flies like a seagull's corpse only this far. Here on the ice, they'd left her to to stare at the skies, praying and singing her soul up to the blessed star people. Wind Woman had blown her stiff corpse over, snow drifting softly to bury her, until Wolf came to chew her frozen flesh. The urge to rush down over the drift, screaming his rage and hurt, rose powerfully. He forced it back. Food. Wolf was food.
Father's son looks away when hunger forces hunter to stalk hunter. What have we done that he punishes us so?
Runzin Light rose slowly to his knees, judging the distance. Wolf stopped short, head coming up, pointed ears pricked. Willing himself to remain motionless, Runzin Light gauged the wind, waiting, hoping his hunger-robbed limbs wouldn't betray him this last time. Wolf turned his head, gaunt ribs working as he searched the wind, an uneasy presence leaving him wary. Runzin Light cleared his thoughts, shifting his eyes slightly to the side. For long moments he waited, while Wolf's nerves settled and the animal's gray nose dropped to gnaw the corpse again. Runzin Light tensed, threw his weight into the atlatl. The dart caught Wolf just behind the ribs. He ran away into the night. Hollow hunger voices echoed in his head as Runzin Light followed the dark blotches of blood on the snow. He stopped, dropping to one knee. Weakly raising his atlatl, he pounded the stain to chip it loose. With a mittened hand, he lifted a bit of red-splotched snow, sniffing. Gut blood. It carried the pungency of severed intestines. Burning blood. It would slow Wolf, bring him to an eventual stop. From blood smear to blood smear, he worked out the trail, growing uneasy as the distance stretched between him and camp. Wind Woman's breath shifted across the land, blowing snow to fill his tracks. The eyes of the long dark lay heavy and menacing upon him. He gazed upward.
Spirits, leave me alone. I must find Wolf. Don't eat my soul. Don't.
The drain on his soul abated, but the presence clung in the air, floating, waiting to see if his honor proved worthy. In the lee of a drift, he studied the tracks. Wolf had stopped here, and even lain down for a short while. A blacker patch of blood stained the snow. Runzin Light's fingers trembled inside the heavy mittens as he used a stone dart point to carefully pry the frozen blood from the ice. Heedless of the wolf hair sticking to it, he chewed, grimacing at the gut juice taste. Food. The first he'd enjoyed in 4 days. 4 days. The dreamer's number. His mother had told him that. A day for each of the directions to bring the soul awake. He stood, slowly scanning the landscape.
You're here, Wolf. You feel the spirit close.
Eyes to the snow, he clutched his weapons. 2 darts, both as long as he was tall, and his atlatl, blessed by the blood of Mammoth and Grandfather White Bear. He shuffled ahead, paced just fast enough to keep warm. Hunger stalked his rubbery legs as he stalked his prey. Wind-sculpted snow wavered, shimmering in his tear-blurred eyes.
Is this a dream hunt? I must catch you, Wolf.
The soul eaters of the long dark drifted closer.
The people need meat! Hear me, Wolf? We're starving!
Wind Woman tugged Runzin Light's furs, pushing him toward the land of the big ice and Father Sun's home. South, ever south. Even now, Wolf ran that direction, away from the shelters of the people and into the unknown where even Crow Caller feared to go.
Crow Caller.
Runzin Light's gut tightened at the thought of the old man. The cursed shaman had taken Dancing Fox for a wife, knowing she despised him. But who could deny a shaman of Crow Caller's power? It had been a winter of sorrow. Runzin Light had lost so much. His mother, and even the woman who made his heart sing. He blinked, shaking his head. Dizziness swept over him. He fought for balance.
A little longer, spirits. Just give me a little longer.
Hungry. Too hungry. The people insisted the hunters be fed first. People without strong hunters died. Still, he had cheated, given his share to Laughing Sunshine. Her milk had dried up, and her baby wailed pitifully. Yet if he could find Wolf, she could feed it again. Brunzen Light shivered hard, but the sharp breaths helped his mind slow its wheeling. He continued his pursuit on leaden legs, knowing Wolf lurked close, angry, unwilling to die peacefully. Pushing himself up, he dusted the snow away and looked to his weapons, resettling the long dart into the hook in the end of the atlatl. Mind tumbling, for a moment he tried to remember why he'd left the safety of the shelters.
What was I? Wolf.
He concentrated on his prey, frightened by the lapse. Again, he bent to the tracks. For weeks, the people had been living off mammoth's hide, cutting apart, section by section, the very roofs over their heads. He stumbled, almost falling. As he struggled to stay erect, he saw movement from the corner of his eye. He spun sluggishly. Too late. A cornice collapsed under Wolf as he leapt from the crest of a drift. Wolf crashed down, rolling out of control in a cascade of powdery snow. He knocked Brunzen Light sprawling. He scrambled to his knees to face Wolf.
My brother, let me kill you. The people starve. Bless your soul to our use. We are worthy.
Wolf bounded forward. By instinct, Brunzen Light rolled away, a strong jaw snapped for his leg. The beast's breath came in frozen puffs hanging in the air. Head lowered, yellow eyes squinted, he bared his teeth. Brunzen Light stood, edging around. The bloody, fletched dart shaft poked out of Wolf's side, flopping loosely with each labored breath. Blood dripped from the torn wound and soaked Wolf's coat, freezing in strings.
Why do I feel no fear? Wolf faces me with hate in his eyes. We're both hungry. Maybe starving makes men wolves' fools?
Wind Woman howled through the frozen darkness. A gentle dusting of snow glistened in the light of the Star People as it settled over them.
Wolf, I'm sorry. Father Sun has truly forgotten us when we must eat each other. Where has Caribou gone? Where is Mammoth?
The beast's head lowered. For the first time, Brunzen Light noticed the froth of red building on Wolf's mouth. The tumble down the drift must have driven the dart deeper to wound a lung. Wolf's limbs trembled in sudden weakness. Clumsy, the animal stumbled, falling.
Forgive me, brother. I send your soul to the Star People. Your flesh will make my people strong. You are brave, Brother Wolf.
He drove a long dart through Wolf's shoulder, using it like a spear. Wolf kicked violently as Brunzen Light struggled on the end of the shaft. Then the big animal stilled, fierce yellow eyes staring vacantly at the snow. Brunzen Light sagged, looking up at the Star People overhead.
Thank you, Wolf. Father Sun, are you listening? Wolf has just given his life to save your people. He cared about us.
His hands shook as he sliced the gut cavity open, releasing a rising puff of steam. It swirled around, caressing his head in the warm odor of blood. He tore the heart loose and gratefully sucked the life-hot blood from it. With the razor-sharp points of his darts, he cut the thick heart muscle into strips. He choked them down, almost enjoying the sudden cramps twisting his stomach. The acrid unpleasantness of wolf taste filled him, power in its own right. Wolf's strength coursed through his body. Brunzen Light turned to the high drift Wolf had tumbled down and began pawing into the crusted snow. Within minutes, his skilled hands had hollowed out a shelter. He stared upward at the night sky.
Get away! I've shown honor! You have no claim on my soul! Go! Leave me alone!
The malignant powers of the Long Dark pulled back, respecting him and his courage. Praying Grandfather Whitebear wouldn't find him, he pulled Wolf's carcass up to block most of the entrance from Wind Woman's seeking fingers, and curled into a ball, dropping into an exhausted sleep. The long hunger mixed with fatigue, while the strength of Wolf's blood warmed his stomach to run strong in his veins. The dreaming swept in from the blackness of slumber, catching him off guard with its strength. In the dreaming, he and Wolf walked side by side. Father-son no longer hid behind Cloudmother. Here in the dreaming, hunger didn't ravage his limbs or make his head light. He walked strong, Wolf in a swinging gait at his heels.
There, you see? There to the south.
Runzen Light lifted a hand to shade his eyes from the searing glare of Father-son's rays on packed snow. He looked, seeing what Wolf saw. The big ice sparkled before him, a forbidding wall of cold and blue ice under the mountains of snow. Water ran from the huge wall, carrying gravel and rocks out into the light before freezing into odd shapes in the frigid air. No wonder Crow Caller feared it. Runzen Light swallowed as he and Wolf trotted closer. As they neared the wall, a wide braided river spilled out of the giant crack. Glacial cobbles stacked and piled in the broad valley as the ice retreated from drainages and hills. They walked along the crystal waters, Runzen Light seeing salmon and char, red with the spawn, fighting their way up the river while grayling darted here and there.
Through the crack in the ice. Walk with me.
Together, they walked along the giant crack. Looking up, Runzen Light could see Blue Sky Man far above in a jagged line where the ice had been sundered. Then he walked in darkness. Black, eternal, the night closed around him. Only his fingers tracing Wolf's coat reassured him that his soul hadn't been forever buried. After a time, a pinpoint of light twinkled, growing ever stronger. The walls spread wider, allowing more of Blue Sky Man's expanse to become visible. Fear slipped away like caribou's winter coat in spring. For a long time, they ran through blue shadow, gravel shifting under their padded feet, until at last, a ridge of water-smoothed boulders blocked the way. Wolf jumped lightly from each, turning at the top to stare down over his shoulder. Wind Woman ruffled his long, gray-white fur with her fingers.
This is the way, man of the people. I show you the way to salvation. If I had come here first, I would not have tried to eat flies like a seagull, and you would not have shot me. Now, take my flesh, eat it, and grow strong, so you can come this way! This way!
Wolf jumped from rock to rock, bushy tail catching the silver sunlight as he balanced and disappeared over the top of the ridge in a flying leap. Runzen Light followed, pulling himself slowly up. Bracing off the polished surfaces of granite, he climbed higher, higher. Father-son bathed his face with light as he sweated his way, lungs heaving, to the top of the ridge. Half-blinded, he looked out and sucked in a sudden, awed breath. Thick grasses waved under the caress of Wind Woman. Brown hair shining, Mammoth turned, raising his head, trunk curling up around ivory-white tusks to sniff the air. Caribou snuffled, antlers nothing more than nubs under a new growth of velvet. Muskox pawed, dropping his nose to present horns in his age-old defense posture. Far out in the grass, Wolf ran, greeting Fox and Weasel, Crow and others. Runzen Light smiled, opening his arms so Father-son could beat life into his veins. Below him, Grandfather Brown Bear rolled on his back in the grass, grabbing his toes before tumbling sideways to shake his silky coat in the brilliant light. Long-horned buffalo grazed, tails flipping nervously on their short-haired rumps. Moose stood in the wallows, moss hanging from antlers as he ducked his head to search for tender water plants.
This is the land of the people! This is where Father Sun lives, his home in the south. Wolf, bless you for showing me this way. I will bring the people here, and together we will sing our thanks to you.
A strong gust of wind battered the rock cairn, lancing through the frozen black rock. Icefire huddled in his double-layered caribou hide parkas, arms crossed, where Icefire, most respected elder of the mammoth people, squatted in the protection of the rock pile. Despite the wind-spawned ground blizzard that obscured the land in a white haze, he could see up through the wispy tendrils of snow, clearing his mind, letting his eyes catalog the myriad of stars. Icefire ran his tongue over the remains of his teeth. The new gap was unfamiliar where the first upper left molar had fallen out. Only the right side of his mouth could still chew. He traced the ridges on the backs of his upper incisors and watched the stars.
So many years I've been alone. Why have you taken all I've ever loved? Great mystery above, what do you want from me?
He listened, hoping for a voice, for a vision to form from the blowing snow rippling out of the endless plains, blotting out this terrible year. He shifted, an angle of rock cutting into his back as he looked to the north. The drawing unease still nagged at him. It had been almost 2 tens of fingers since he'd first traveled there, following the call. Now it had begun again, only calling him south this time, leaving him sleepless, like this night. The enemy lay there. The enemy whose land they now hunted. The enemy who never fought, but abandoned their possessions and fled ever south. Where did a warrior find honor in such as them? How would the White Tusk clan ever gain the distinction of cherishing and protecting the sacred white hide, his tribe's power totem, while war raged among the other clans in the far west?
We must force these cowards to fight us.
Icefire rubbed an ice-encrusted mitten across his nose, leaning his head back to look up at the snow-misted stars. The hide was the most valued sacred object of the mammoth people. It had been taken long ago, the skin of a white mammoth calf, carefully tanned. The history of the clans, the symbolism of the directions, and the ways of earth and air and water and light had been delicately drawn around the hide's symbolic heart area. The picture had been drawn with blood ritually poured from the heart of a freshly killed mammoth. Without the hide, the people would starve. Mammoth would no longer hear them. They would die, blown away like so much down from a snow goose's breast. Weary, Icefire let himself relax. As always on lonely nights such as this, the memory of the woman on the beach returned to haunt him. Such a beauty. He'd been so sure she'd called him to that lonely place, part of the vision, of the dream of pain left by the death of his wife. Perhaps she had. In the vision, she'd given herself to him, led him to love her, to lose himself in the embrace of her soul. Then the Watcher had interfered, changed it all. The vision had been jerked away, leaving him to stare in horror at what he'd done. He'd run then, seeking the great mystery's explanation, calling angrily into the night to confront the Watcher. All to no end.
I am only your tool. Why have you used me so, great mystery above? What am I to you when I would only be a man? Why have you cursed me? Left me childless when all I wanted were sons?
He closed his eyes, shaking his head. The pull of the new land strengthened, and in his exhaustion, he allowed his spirit to be drawn southward, ever southward. Like smoke from a green dung fire, Icefire's spirit drifted over the land, seeing, feeling, hearing the spirit and soul breathed up from the rock, dirt, and tundra steppe below. Then a young man stood before him, blocking him. He rose from the rocky hills, feet braced, dressed in the manner of the enemy, wearing a white bear's hide. He had the glowing eyes of a dreamer.
Move, man! You're in the way of the White Tusk Clan! In the way of my people!
What do you seek?
What I was destined to find. The way for my people! The sons I would have born!
The young man cocked his head, giving the old shaman a curious look with his shining eyes.
You already have sons. Your destiny awaits if you'll take it. Your sons are your destiny. Which will you choose? Light or dark?
He lifted his hand. The vision of a beautiful woman molded in the clouds coalesced, her hair blowing in the wind.
She is light. Choose her, and you and yours will pass this way.
The youth lifted his other hand, blowing across his open palm, and from it sprang a rainbow, arching across the sky, dimming even the colorful bands of light that the great mystery played over the northern heavens. The young man pointed to a dark cloud.
Choose darkness, and you will all die.
I said move! We'll crush you beneath us despite your magic. We won't tolerate this dreaming, this magic of your kind. The great mystery will see to that. Our darts are stronger than your dreams, your watchers. Don't play with us, man of the enemy. We'll break your people like a dry willow twig.
Is that what you seek? To destroy? That is your choice?
No.
Icefire trembled, a desperate tingle of fright winding up his spine.
I seek my sons, the destiny of my people, possession of the sacred hide.
And what would you give?
I? Anything.
Give me your son. I will pay you back in kind. A son for a son, a victory for defeat, life for death.
But I...
Do you agree? Will you trade what is yours for what is mine?
I would, if it...
Then it shall be.
And the young man turned, shimmering, dropping to all fours, arms and legs multiplying until he'd become a red spider. Turning, the beast raced up the rainbow, slowing near the top. There it turned, spreading its legs, spinning the colors of the rainbow across the heavens until they wove themselves into a web connecting the dewdrops of stars. Icefire jerked awake. Squinting into the snow-blown darkness, he winced, legs numb from sitting so long. Slowly, he stood, feeling the sting of blood revitalizing his numbed limbs. As he looked up at the snow-glazed stars, he found the shape of the spider there, hanging, waiting, watching.
Then it shall be. A son for a son. I have no son to begin with.
Green Mystery, am I your toy again? To be thrown about like a fishbone doll? Have you no other man to soak in sorrow?
Limping from the blood tingles in his leg, Icefire climbed out of the cairn, hobbling slowly down the hill to the conical mammoth-hide shelters dotting the plain below. Far to the south, Runzin Light blinked frosty lashes, wondering at the strange elder of the others, the man he'd talked so blithely to in his dream. A frown etched his brow.
Where did those words come from? I would never speak to an elder like that. What can it mean? Who are these people? And sons? What do I know of sons?
He tried to stretch out his legs, but couldn't in the small shelter. Fear gripped him until he remembered where he was. The dream hunt. Curiously, he reached out, feeling the reassuring touch of Wolf's hide.
I'll go south with you, Wolf. But man of the others, who are you? Why did you seek me? How can I, Runzin Light, trade you a son?
Dancing Fox pulled the last scraps of leather tightly around Laughing Sunshine's dead baby, covering the tiny, colorless face for the last time. Fox was a beautiful woman with an oval face, high cheekbones, and flashing black eyes as wide and round as an owl's. She gritted her teeth in a mixture of anger and hurt as she fumbled to shove a bone awl through the frozen leather. Laughing Sunshine watched with eyes filled with pain.
Ori, please. I can't bear this.
Dancing Fox quickly pulled her hand up into her sleeve and used the hide cuff as a cushion beneath her fist as she forced the awl through the leather. Placing the awl in her teeth, she worked the last segment of sinew through the hole and drew it tight, sealing the tiny face in the hide sack.
So many dead. Has the long dark eaten all our souls? Have light and life left the whole world?
Fox rubbed her gaunt belly, fearing Crowcaller's seed might have taken root in her womb. Her bleeding hadn't come in the last 2 moons. But then, hunger did that to a woman. Across from her, Laughing Sunshine rocked back and forth on her heels, grief tightening her triangular face and beaked nose. With a flake of stone she'd struck off one of Singing Wolf's cores, she cut at the skin of her gaunt cheeks until blood ran hotly. Then she turned the sharp edge on her hair, cutting it short to the collar, letting long black strands fall onto the frozen, stained ground.
Oh.
Dancing Fox tied the death knot on the baby's sack. She held the sack out for the mother to take, but Sunshine only shook her head bitterly. Dancing Fox laid the baby in the crook of her left arm, and with her right, reached out to squeeze Sunshine's shoulder.
Sunshine, stop this. You're using up strength. You need to live.
Maybe I don't want to live. All my children have died in this long dark.
Hush! Of course you want to live. There can be other babies. You aren't so old. You can't...
Doesn't anyone dream anymore? Oh, what's happened to us? What are we doing here? Starving to death? Has Father Son abandoned us to the spirits of the Long Dark?
It may be. But I plan to go on living just to spite him. And I'm going to drag you along with me. Now stop torturing yourself. We have duties to perform.
Is your heart as empty as your belly, Fox? What has Crowcaller done?
Done?
Dancing Fox looked away, pain smoldering in her breast at the mention of her husband's name, a scowl marring her face.
He's made me stronger.
You mean half-human. You used to be kind and...
Kindness is for the living. The dead don't need it anymore.
But my little girl's spirit can still hear.
There aren't any spirits.
You... Of course there are. What do you think makes...
No, there aren't. I've been praying to Father Son and the monster children for 2 moons to...
Since you married Crowcaller?
They haven't answered a single prayer.
Maybe his power prevents them from hearing you.
Maybe.
So they might still exist. And my little girl can hear.
Of course.
Dancing Fox nodded, shame at her insensitivity reddening her cheeks.
I didn't mean it, Sunshine. Of course she can hear.
I know you didn't. You're just hungry and tired, like the rest of us.
They exchanged a tender smile and crawled beneath the flap out into the faint gray light. Dancing Fox's legs quivered weakly as she got to her feet. Straining, she helped pull Laughing Sunshine up. Crowcaller stood a short distance away, his withered features contorted with irritation. On one side of his hawk nose glittered a deadly black eye. The other stared white blind, lifeless. Singing Wolf, Laughing Sunshine's husband, strode forward to embrace his wife and take the child from Fox's arms. He laid the baby in Sunshine's reluctant hands. One by one, the people lifted the frozen flaps of their shelters and stumbled awkwardly to their feet. Some swayed, dizzy from hunger. Crowcaller turned and began walking to the edge of camp, Laughing Sunshine and Singing Wolf behind him. The rest of the people fell in line behind them, plodding unsteadily around the ice-packed shelters to the drifts beyond. Laughing Sunshine started up a slope, kicking footholds in the white crust. Stumbling, she nearly dropped her child. Hugging it to her breast, she continued on. Following haltingly in her footsteps, the people crossed to the other side. Here and there, The dead lay visible, parts of their bodies twisting gruesomely from the snow. The old had died first. In the early days, they had quietly wandered out into the vast, wind-ripped wilderness to die alone, as was their right. Later, as strength failed, the elderly had frozen in their robes, refusing to eat. Sunshine placed the baby on top of the drift and dropped to her knees.
A girl. Let's get this over with quickly so we can get back to the shelters. It's all
right. Sunshine turned her swollen eyes to stare imploringly at the old shaman. Dancing Fox lifted a brow, anger searing her breast when she saw the devastated look in Sunshine's eyes.
Shut up, husband. Any child is precious.
Are you so anxious to have me fill you that you'll take any result? Keep your mouth shut.
Hardly.
Brave, eh? I ought to curse your womb so you'll never give birth.
Would you? I'd be grateful.
Crowcaller lifted his chin slowly, rage gleaming in his one black eye. He stabbed a mittened hand toward her.
You see? Evidence that women are less than nothing. Dirt, useful only for growing a man's seed.
It's true. Everyone knows it. Let's hurry and get back to the shelters.
Even a boy like Eagle Cries knows truth when he hears it.
You fools! Who do you think wiped your butts when you were babes? Who wiped your tears when you were frightened? Eh? Your fathers?
People turned, watching pensively as Broken Branch, the oldest member of the band, struggled to hobble forward. The people faded back, clearing a path for her.
What are you doing arguing when a member of our clan is dead? You ought to be thinking about how we can keep anyone else from dying.
Yes, we must leave here. Death stalks each of us.
Don't agree with me, you old fake.
I have the greatest spirit power among the people.
So you keep telling me.
Don't challenge me, you old witch. I'll curse your soul so it never reaches the Star People. I'll see you buried, locked in the ground forever, to rot in darkness.
The people backed away from Broken Branch. Dancing Fox stepped closer.
We're leaving here tomorrow.
Singing Wolf, his hand playing over his wife's unfeeling head, stared at Crowcaller.
Leaving? I've hunted and seen no game. If we starve to death sitting, won't we starve faster walking? Worse, in hunger, we've eaten our dogs. Everything must be carried on our backs.
One Who Cries, another hunter, nodded thoughtfully at Singing Wolf's words.
If we go, we'll leave a string of dead. You expect these old ones to keep up? And which way will we go? Where is Mammoth? Where is Caribou?
Maybe we were supposed to come here. You're the dreamer, Crowcaller. Do something. Tired of watching my children die. Go back? But behind are the others. If we go back, they'll kill us. Maybe if we go further south, we'll...
We can't go south. My father's father went there. He found a wall of ice higher than men can climb. Higher than seagull can fly. Eagle can fly that high. But nothing else. They hunted...
How do you know it's higher than a man can climb, eh? Did your grandfather try?
He didn't have to. He could look at it and know.
He was a coward. The people knew it then, and we see it in you now. You go back north if you want. Let those others kill you. I'm going south. Heron went out there someplace. Now there was a real dreamer. She'd make...
What? You'd follow a witch? A wicked spirit who sucks men's souls and blows them out into the long dark. Besides, she's just a legend, like smoke blowing around your doddering mind.
Bah! What do you know? I knew her. She went south seeking spirit power to...
Then go! No one stop her! This old hag deserves death. She's no good to the people. She's too old to hunt or fish. Her womb has gone as dead as her mind. She can't even dream anymore.